On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we're getting caught up in a dodgy tweet with Hugh Bonneville and Karen Gillan in Douglas is cancelled on ITV, fleeing to Spain with Eva Longoria in Land of Women on Apple TV Plus, and getting back in the kitchen with Carmi, Richie and the gang in the third season of The Bear on Disney Plus, probably, if we get screeners in time, which to date we have not, but more on that later. Plus, we are joined on the podcast this week by Rap Man, who stops by to talk all about Supercell on Netflix. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that is, as ever, committed to being up to the minute, on the very cutting edge, with all the latest TV developments, which is why this week we are recording a full week before we go out. Proper on the ball us. We are a little preemptive this week, but for one very good reason, so that Kay can go to Thailand and get a massage. But that's fine, because I'm sure it's an extremely vital work-related massage, and I'm glad that we have her here today, muscle knots and all.
James, it is for work. I don't know how many times I can tell you this. I have to write about it. I'm not going for the fun of it. Listen, it's going to be, I've got to get on a plane.
Does this mean you're available at all times for?
I'm not available to you. Oh. No, I mean, look, I'm taking it as holiday, but I do have to write it up and it's going to be hard work. That's what, I mean, I'll keep you updated on our WhatsApp group. Mm. I'll tell you each time I'm getting a massage or, I mean, there's loads of things on offer. I think yoga is a thing. So yeah.
Aqua
I'll
yoga.
Tell you how I get on. I'll stay in the shallow end.
Wow. Okay. Boy, do you have any vital business massages on your schedule?
If only. No. Yeah. Sadly not. I missed what's it called week? A Thrive Week as well.
We had Thrive listeners. Week at work, yes.
Yeah, Thrive Week. I did not thrive for that week, but you know. maybe next time.
And I'm not thriving now because I'm ill. I am ill.
He's got the lurky.
What you need right now, James, is a bit of Thrive Week action. If only you had timed this illness for Thrive Week, then it would have been fine. Crystals would have been enabled.
Yes, that's right.
And you would have been cured. Like, just like that. Isn't that right?
Our company did, in fact, put on a room full of crystals. That's genuinely a thing that happened.
Let's not. How are your hydration levels?
My hydration levels are okay. So I have my little lateral flow test here, which disappointingly is negative, as you can see here. So I don't have COVID, which means I now feel that I can't fully wallow in how ill I feel because it's just like a cold. But I had a sore throat and now I feel all bunged up and I have a cough.
You've got a cold, so it's devastating.
I have man flu, but yeah. I can't get the sympathy because I think if you have COVID, everyone's like, oh, I'm sorry. And also fuck off and stay at home. Whereas now it's just like, get to work, you know, shut up, suck it up. Get on with it.
You don't sound good, though. I mean, it's patently obvious.
Thank you, Boydie. Yeah. No, presumably that has nothing to do with my illness. So.
No, you're literally, the fact that you're soldiering on is very admirable. Mm.
Thank you. And I should point out, at before 9 in the morning as well. It's a crack of crack of dawn recording a week before we go out.
This is only two days before we usually record, isn't it?
It is bright and early on Tuesday morning.
Everyone's making this into a bigger deal than I think it needs to be. It's just two days. It's a very big deal.
Huge, massive. 6 days before this podcast goes out. It's mad.
Just 2 days before our usual record.
Yeah, but we are
good
in fact here.
Good perspective.
Obviously, now we would segue into the section what we've been watching, but of course, the answer is nothing. You know why? Because we recorded the last podcast 2 seconds ago. So, you know.
I've watched something.
Kay's watched something.
No. I've got some stuff to talk about.
Hour since we recorded last week's podcast.
Sleep is for losers. No, I love sleep. So, the two things I wanted to tell you I watched, and I won't go into depth into the first one because it's only just recently landed, so I don't want to spoil anything for anyone. But I finished Bridgerton, as I alluded to on Plus. And having thought, you know, at the beginning when we reviewed the first episode, I wasn't that enamored with it. It ticked all the boxes that you want from Bridgerton, but I just wasn't getting into that love story between Penelope and Colin. But having watched the second half, I just absolutely love this series. I think it's really good. And for anyone who watched Gogglebox recently and saw the sex scene between Penelope and Colin, and again, that's not a spoiler. If anyone saw the end of the first season and what they got up to in the carriage, you'll know that it was very much on the cards. Do you know what? When I watched it on Gogglebox, I was cringed out by it, I've got to admit. But I realise now it's because it was so out of context that it was.
Did you watch it first on Gogglebox?
I watched Gogglebox and I had seen it on Gogglebox.
So you experienced Bridgerton first and foremost through Gogglebox before watching it?
The second half of it, I was watching Gogglebox.
Surely this is not the way the creators intended.
That is a red flag.
Honestly, I didn't I just didn't have time to watch full series, and it was on my list of things to watch. I watched Gogglebox, didn't realize they were going to be reviewing it, and then I saw they obviously chose the clip of them having sex for the first time, and I was just like, oh god! I was like, I really balked at it. But then when I watched the series very shortly after the rest of the series, I was like, oh my god! I just thought it was so, in the context of the love story, it's so beautifully done and so intimate, and just it just said a lot about the characters. So overall, I'm pleased with this season.
Yeah, I've heard that this was a very good. In fact, the sex scene was described in The Empire of You using terms that I found a bit like, I was like, okay. It's like it was a very beautiful sex scene. I was like, okay, but that seems to be generally what people have said, that this scene was lovely.
Honestly, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think when you catch up on it, because I know you say you're not going to, but you will.
Eventually.
It's so well done, and it is beautiful. I think it's beautiful. So anyway. Moving away from the sex scene in Bridgerton.
Well, my understanding, moving back to the sex scene, is that Nicola Coughlan had quite a lot of feedback. Feedback? Is feedback the word?
Input.
That's the one. Input into how that scene was done. Mm. And as someone told me that the quote was, she asked to be as naked as possible in that scene to get people used to seeing bigger bodies in sex scenes on screen.
Yeah, and she looks amazing.
I've seen it as well. And she's not as naked as possible. So that's been slightly hyped up. I mean, she is,
I would say she's.
Yeah, but that
she
phrase is
naked
is
a lot. Oh yeah, well, sure, she didn't have a vagina, Boyd, but like.
I mean, you've gone there. You've gone there at this early stage.
Well, yeah. I mean, she shows pretty much everything else. I mean,
The phrase as naked as possible. I'm just responding to that phrase. That's all. Factually,
what Boyd is saying is technically it is possible to be more naked. Yeah, that's what he's saying.
It's absolutely possible. Yeah.
I think she did a great job.
No, she's
showing
brilliant.
Everything that she felt comfortable showing, and that was right and proper on TV. Probably. I mean, have we seen? Bridgerton penis? How come? I don't know.
Fleeting.
That is a sentence I didn't need to hear this morning.
No, but I'm just trying to because I was trying to think if they've ever shown genitalia, in which case she wouldn't. Do you know what I mean?
I think fleetingly, but that's just an assumption on my part. Yeah, maybe not.
Okay, fine. So anyway, right? Is there any more about the sex scene, or can I move on?
No, you can definitely move on now. We can move on from the Bridgerton penis to whatever else you've been watching.
Okay. Insomnia on Paramount Plus. So we reviewed it. Do you remember the Vicky McClure? I think Boyd obviously hosted the event. It's so good. It's so psychologically complex and twisty and messed up. I love it.
Mm. I didn't host the event. I interviewed her for this very podcast. That's what happened.
Oh, okay. My pleasure.
That's okay.
Sorry. Yeah, fair that the cage just assumed.
Yeah.
Never assume. But yeah, it's so, so good. If anyone else is watching it, let me know. But I've just been lapping it up, and because it's dropping on the weekly, even though I've got access to it, I'm watching it like that, and it's a tense wait.
Boyd, have you seen it all? Obviously, I haven't actually. I'm behind on that.
Yeah, it's got a good, it's got a satisfying ending for sure. Yeah,
it makes you flip flop constantly between what you think's who the perpetrator is, who's in the wrong. It's so good at that. Like James, you should when you get a chance catch up on it, because I think you'd enjoy it. How you
it
never quite know
list.
Who to trust.
Yeah. I will. I would like to watch the rest of that.
It's not quite as mad as Behind Her Eyes. Which is one of the maddest. I mean, I think Behind Her Eyes will go down in history probably as the maddest, the single maddest plot twist in TV history. So it's got a lot to live up to. But yeah, it's very entertaining. Yeah.
Boydie, have you had a chance to watch anything since we last convened?
Forget genitals in Bridgerton. I've been catching up with a little show they call The Boys.
Oh.
Yes. Ooh. And what you I don't think in the pantheon of references you've made to the fact that you watch all the episodes of The Boys, blah, 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 all the ridiculous scenes that there are coming up, I don't think you mentioned the fact, spoiler alert, okay, this is a spoiler alert, everyone.
Hang on.
No, wait. No, you can't.
This seems ill-advised.
Yeah.
Come on.
I don't think you can. You can't be willy-nilly with spoilers and think it's okay just by saying spoiler first.
Yeah. Also, Kay's already covered off the willy-nilly stuff with Bridgerton, so we need
Well, you'd think she may have covered off the willy-nilly stuff, but she hasn't covered off the mass self bumlick human centipede style sex trade, as it's been referred to in some quarters.
God.
In right. Which,
that's not really a spoiler. I think you can get away with that.
Mean,
that's fine.
I can't believe you blithely just did not mention the fact that in one scene in this show,
I'm sorry.
This character.
It is too early to talk about
Bottom Left. Well, this character, Splinter, played by, I have to say, the hero of the hour, Rob Benedict. What a hero. Has to basically rim himself about eight versions of himself, okay?
Yeah, fully naked. Because he's like a multiple man.
In a sauna.
As naked as humanly possible.
As naked as humanly possible. And it's absolutely extraordinary. And I remember in our review of it, when I reviewed it, I was like, you know, I wasn't sure they could outdo themselves in terms of shock value and, you know, some of the images we've seen in previous episodes of The Boys. But they absolutely did, to give them credit. In the episode, I think it's episode 2, isn't it?
Yes, I believe it is.
In the what one publication described as, The Boys just aired a fully nude human centipede brimming sex train.
Sex train.
Yeah, that's a great sentence. Is a great sentence.
So kudos. And I have to say as well, kudos. I mean, that particular scene is extraordinary and genuinely... That's something we'd never seen before.
You were happy with that level of nakedness and that.
It's definitely a TV first. Well, I mean, technically, 100%. Yeah, because that is as naked. He is, not only is he as naked as he could be, literally as naked as he could be, penis included, there are also like 8 versions of him as naked as he could be.
Equally
naked. In a later scene, he has the naked guy who, why can't he find some fucking clothes to put on? I know there's like, has a massive fight with some of the soups and all various naked versions of him have to wield weaponry, so to speak. So the whole episode is unbelievable in all senses.
I will also say that one of our listeners sent me a screen grab. Have you ever used, I don't know how often you do it, but if you watch it on screen, it's probably not that often, but if you ever use Amazon's function, you know, where when you pause it on Prime Video, it's actually one of the cool things, I think all the streamers should do this, it gives you like the bios of everyone who's in the scene. Yeah. And someone sent in the screen grab from that. They said, if you're not watching The Boys by checking it, then you're missing out on half the gags. Because if you pause the sex train scene, it says... insert actor's name who I've forgotten, would like you to know that he, and it's something like played Richard III or something like that. But it's like, and then the thing underneath it said, we are under no obligation to say this, but we just thought we'd point it out. And that's just really fucking funny. It wasn't Richard III.
Rob Benedict.
I couldn't remember exactly what the line was, but it was very funny.
Yeah, he deserves a special award. I don't know if there's...
I thought that was most amusing. But the thing is, that's not even... I mean, there's so much more to come that series of The Boys. No pun intended.
More than the centipede.
There's a whole thing with farmyard animals. I don't even know where to start. You alluded
to these farmyard animals before. What episode is that in?
I'm not telling you. Because, it will be a spoiler. Also, I think you need to be surprised.
Okay. I watched up to episode 3. So I've watched up to episode 3 now.
Yeah. There are many, many things. There's a sex dungeon. There's a lot coming.
Wow. I've got to crank up those screeners.
Too much.
Yeah. Because only 3 are available now to the masses.
Yes.
People on the ground.
I also would say that it definitely is better than, I think the first episode, it definitely gets better as well. And all the stuff all the satire stuff and stuff about Marvel and all of that is coming steadily to the fore. The fake filmmaking, I think, is hilarious. The guy, the director, the ridiculous director trying to tell the black actor what to do and to be more street. It's very funny. I think that's in episode 3. It is a really good show, even though it's time to say goodbye.
Well, I mean, one more season. I think that's fine. Yeah. But like, as you said, like the satire still bites. It's still shocking. It's still funny. It's still compelling. Like it's a great show. You just need a strong stomach for, you know, sex trains and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly.
I've watched nothing. I've literally not watched anything because we only just recorded the fucking podcast.
Where's your commitment, yesterday, James?
I know. Yesterday, obviously, I had to. We reviewed. What did we review yesterday? I've instantly forgotten. We did.
Mr. In Between.
Yes. Because we did Mr. In Between. That's right. Who. We did Mr. In Between and Doctor Who. So I watched both of those yesterday. But I've not watched anything else at all. So I have nothing to contribute to this section at all. Sorry.
You're not watching like the Euros? As well. That's the other thing I was going to mention is the Euros, which is dominating.
It's shockingly, I have not watched the Euros.
Because I'm watching 3 games a day, obviously, at the moment as well. So,
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh no, I watched, I'm pressing on with We Are Lady Parts. So I watched a couple more episodes of that, which I'm enjoying. Like, I watched the Malala episode, which was fun.
Isn't it fantastic?
Yes. So I'm watching the rest of that, which is good. Well, I'm also jealous of our friends Down Under who are watching Colin from Accounts.
Oh,
and people have been tweeting to let me know that they are enjoying the second series of Colin from Accounts quite a lot.
I was going to say, pundit of the tournament so far is definitely Ian Wright, without doubt, on ITV. And I think he's got, I'm trying to work it, I think he's got the same glasses as me. These glasses that I'm wearing now.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Boyd.
I'm just saying, I think it's true.
So are you saying Ian Wright copied you?
Well, you know, if you're a style inspiration, what can you do?
You always get compliments on your glasses. Mm. I found it weird when you change from black to these, you know, to your brown boys, because I always liked you in a black.
Okay. Well, I'll take that on board.
So to speak.
Steady.
This is no. I'm calling time on this immediately.
God.
Right.
I hate myself.
Passing the reins over to Kay seems like a bad idea, but it's time for the listener question, so I have no choice. Kay, what do you have for us?
I have a message from Gary, who has just returned from the beautiful Dorset coastline, where he went with his partner and they visited the idyllic town of West Bay, which was used as locations for Broadchurch. He visited Wessex Police Station, the cafe, the Broadchurch Echo newspaper office, and Hardy's Riverside Home. And he even stood on the spot where poor Danny Latimer's body was found. So his question is, does anyone else do that when they're holidaying, or even specifically head for places related to their favourite television shows? Later this year, he's heading to Port Merion to check out the area in which the prisoner was shot. Are we just great big fucking nerds, he asks, or does anyone else in the gang likewise do so in unfamiliar areas?
I don't do it. I like the idea of it, though. Like, I like the Instagram account that I follow where they have a screenshot and they hold up the picture. Mm. Have you seen this?
Yeah.
I think that's great, which is always nice to do. But no, I've never done, like, location pilgrimage. We have many times on Empire pitched this to advertisers that they should sponsor us to drive around the country going to places where things were shot and reenacting things. But weirdly, no one's taken us up on the offer.
Forget about driving around the country. Why aren't you pitching to fly to LA to do...
I mean, yeah, that's right. I mean, perhaps we've been too modest.
We could go on a road trip. We could do Big Little Lies. We could go down, the coast. That'll be nice. All three of us in a car.
I'm happy
with
this.
Who would drive, actually? I don't want to.
Well, I don't drive, Boyd, so it'd have to be... Yeah.
James would have to be James.
Mm. Yeah. We'll just use Boyd's chauffeur. It'd be fine.
Fair enough.
Yes, I don't know. The closest we went is when we were up in I think it was Edinburgh. We went to the We Will Deep Fry Your Kebab shop from Avengers Infinity War and posed outside that.
I mean, so. I've checked out loads of locations in New York. Yeah, of course. I mean...
Like what?
Well, Manhattan, the Woody Allen's masterpiece. If you go to, you have to go to the Brooklyn side, Dumbo, and stand by the river, and you got the view of the brilliant, beautiful bridge, the Manhattan Bridge. From Manhattan, the film. There's the one street where everyone goes to, very close by there as well, which is featured in Once Upon a Time in America. That Brooklyn kind of again in Dumbo, looking. You'll know the one I mean. There's like you get a bit of the bridge, and everyone goes there and has their picture taken. Such a iconic location. Where else? The Seinfeld Cafe. I've been up there on the Upper West Side. Yeah, we mentioned last week in context, some other context, didn't we? Do you remember? It was a similar question last week about places to eat or something on TV. So I've been.
We also went to the Hilton Hotel, lest we forget.
I mean,
GG? Tell us.
There are a lot. That's brilliant. There are a lot of Hilton hotels, by the way. There's about 5,000 of them.
Run by the airport.
Haven't you been to the Sex and the City? People go to the Sex and the City locations.
Actually, do you know what? For work, I got God, this was a real swizz. I coincidentally was going to New York, otherwise they would have paid for the flights for me to do a feature on Sex and the City, and which included doing the tour. And then they gave me, oh my God, this is back in the day, so it would never happen now. The company gave me like spending money to spend like Carrie and go to the restaurants and like buy clothes like she did. And you know when you're like, how is this happening to me? I went on like a horse and carriage ride through Central Park. Yeah, went to apartment, everything. It was amazing. So I've done that. Also, I've been to, well, I told you this before, when I went to pay pilgrimage to the OC and I actually went to Newport and to find out it wasn't filmed there.
Oh, yeah.
It was actually filmed on Redondo Beach. So
yeah, I went to the OC once and was very disappointed.
Yeah.
I did to answer our previous eatery question, and I guess this one as well, I had lunch last week at Speedy's Cafe, which is the cafe where Sherlock and Watson routinely go. Yeah, yeah. In Sherlock.
That's a good one.
Mm. I went there and I had lunch with Radio 1's Ali Plum, and I had a fry up in Speedy's.
I did a set visit for Sherlock, I think for series 2. And we did all the interviews in Speedy's Cafe. So I interviewed Benedict and Martin Freeman and all those in the cafe. Yeah, that was where, that was like base for the unit base to do the chats and stuff. Yeah.
That's fun. Yeah. I paid pilgrimage to, when we were working in Shaftesbury Avenue in Covent Garden, I paid pilgrimage to Poirot's Art Deco mansion house, which was not far away.
Obsessed with Poirot.
Yeah, and I had a photo taken outside of it, which was on my Instagram, which got hacked. But it was a glorious moment to stand in front of it. The scene of many a great episode, ITV episode. You seem very underwhelmed by that.
Well, I'm fairly underwhelmed, sorry.
James, you haven't watched a Poirot yet, have you?
I mean, I've seen many Poirots because it's been around since the dawn of time. But I once took the Metropolitan line from Pinner into Baker Street with David Suchet. So.
Oh my God, what was he like?
I mean, we hadn't arranged it. We just ended up sitting opposite each other on the Met line. I was like, "Welcome to Baker Street." I went, "That is where you are wrong, Monsieur." I didn't do anything at all.
Yeah,
wouldn't it?
He's a lovely man. I think he would have famously.
I'm sure he is.
Isn't he doing a documentary about Agatha Christie or something? I saw that. I'm sure he is. Yeah, I think so.
Is this how you're breaking the news to me?
Yeah, I'm surprised we haven't discussed that before, but yeah, I think he's doing something like that. Yeah.
Okay, I need you to find out as much information as possible. Mm. Thanks.
I'll have a look. Carry on.
Okay. Are we done with this question? I feel like we're done.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
We're done. We are done with this list of questions. If you would like your question read out here or on Pilot Plus, you send them into Kay at Carabero on the Twitters or to at Pilot TV Pod on Twitter or Instagram. And time, I think, now for this week's guest. So Supercell lands on Netflix this week, and this is a black superhero story in which a bunch of ordinary people from South London develop, well, superpowers. We're going to be reviewing that on this week's Pilot Plus, as it is embargoed. But the creative force behind Supercell is Ratman, and we sent our very own superhero, Alex Godfrey, along to talk to him about it. Now, we had to do this one without a proper mic, but with a little post-production audio wizardry, this should still sound good. So this is Alex talking to Ratman.
Hey, Raps. Ratman.
What's good, man?
Welcome to the Pilot TV Podcast. I mean, we've had some technical difficulties, but we're here.
You know what? That's what matters, that we arrived.
We made it.
We did.
You've just been telling me you've been doing this like a day and a half press already, but you're getting through.
Yeah, man. It's obviously, it's a lot, but I always love talking about Supercell, so I'm okay.
It's been a few years, too, since you've been.
4 years.
4 years since you were coming. So let me tell you, but so Supercell is, well, I mean, you know, we've met a couple of times and we did a feature in Empire on the show. Thank you. And I've seen the first 4 episodes of out of 6, is it?
Yes, 2 more.
I love this show. It's my favorite show of the year. I'm not just saying wouldn't just say that. You know, I think that. It's about a group of everyday black South Londoners who suddenly find themselves with superpowers. As you've been keen to point out, it's not a show about superheroes.
No, because they're not superheroes.
They are very much not superheroes. Yeah. I don't want to say much about the plot because I don't think I need to. Other than I think it's safe to say one of them ends up being able to time travel. He goes into the near future and some bad shit goes down, which he then wants to come back and reverse. And he can only do that by getting together these people who don't know each other and have all been, I would say, sort of lumbered with these powers.
Yep.
And he has to get them together for the common good to stop this shit going down.
Yeah.
Right. Which is no easy task because maybe these people don't want anything to do with him and don't want to know what he's talking about. And they got their own shit going on.
Yeah, to some it's a curse and to others it's a blessing. And that's part of the journey of the characters.
Yeah. It's a very nuanced show. It's very specific in terms of these characters and the setting. It's mostly in South London, which is where you're from, I believe.
Yes.
So, yeah, I would say what's great about it is there's no like obvious heroes or villains. They're not like archetypal people. Mostly they don't even know. They're not all of them are happy to have these powers. They don't know what to do with it. And some, or even most of them, deal with it very badly, as people would.
Yep.
If suddenly you're given the power of this, that, and the other, and I know we want to be a little bit coy about what the powers are, who's got what at this point, but they've got big time superpowers and they don't know what to do with them. Because if you or I were suddenly given these extraordinary godlike powers, you wouldn't just sort of make a suit and climb up the wall. And that's what's brilliant about the show. It's kind of terrifying. Where is that sort of, was that the germ of the idea when you came up? Was like, what would actually happen?
That was the whole premise of what would I actually do if I got powers? What would a normal person do if they got powers? That I'm the last thing if I get crazy powers, I'm not thinking to get a spandex suit, a mask, and I'm not trying to go stop the bridge from falling down somewhere.
Yeah,
I am trying to think, okay, with this power, how can I financially help myself and my family? How can I help my family's health? Is there anything I can do there? Once I've explored all those avenues and I'm comfortable about, and the people I love and care about are comfortable, then the charity will begin. And okay, what can I do to help others later, mate? But for me as a normal person, I'm trying to get my life in order first. And I think that would be most normal people. So I never understood the superhero where, who am I? Actually, they become martyrs. Like, they had problems before, then they have relationships, then they have bills to pay, then they have stress, they have anyone with help. Then why all of a sudden have they got all of this time to do that? So I just wanted to put it into a grounded, realistic world with normal people when they get these extraordinary powers.
It is without a doubt the most grounded take on this sort of thing I've ever seen. Like, you don't get this in any of the big films. You just don't get it. They are all doing, like, there's always world saving. You're always dastardly plots. Is that because, and you've told us before you were a big fan, you are a big fan of superhero films.
Wow.
But did this come from that, from you being a fan and maybe a frustration in what you were seeing, or more significantly, what you weren't seeing?
Yeah, man, because obviously I grew up watching the Batman. I loved that. That was my first Batman show. I'll share my age now. Watched it as it evolved, the Batman movies with Michael Keaton, and so it come out, and then Heroes came out. I loved Heroes. Played a big part in my influence for this show. And I felt that the first two seasons were great, and then I kind of didn't get what I wanted going forward.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved the premise of regular people with power, but it still became save the children, save the world. And I was like, get it, because that's what we've been taught with superpowers, but it's misfits.
Yeah.
You know, the Marvel Universe started to build, you know, I enjoyed all of that. But I still feel like there was a massive hole for normal people with powers in a show that hasn't been done before. So the minute I got the chance, I said, okay, let me do my version of this now.
Yeah.
And this is what Super Soul is.
Well, you know, above and beyond all of that, and I've told you this before, the thing that I really love about this show is that regardless of the concept and the powers, I love these people. These characters,
with characters.
You could take away this conceit of the show, and you know, the five or six or seven core cast you've got just going through their own problems, you know, having just socially, say, financial difficulties, parenting struggles, you know, whatever they're trying to do to get through the day, for better or worse, you know, what, you know, one of them is, you know, one of them's a father, one of them's just got a job and a girlfriend, and you know, one of them's a drug dealer, you know, it's just it just goes across the board that they're all just normal people trying to live their lives. And I really, they are so, the way you've fleshed them out and drawn them out and grounded them in situations that we can all relate to in some way is what makes the show work. And I think maybe that's what sometimes gets forgotten in other, you know, superhero adventures. You know, this is, like I say, I could watch these characters do anything.
Yeah,
right. And that's a thing, a real triumph of the show.
No, I appreciate that, man. That and I think that's what the standout is. I think when I grew up watching shows, movies, should I say, like Goodfellas and Godfather, the storylines are fun, but what you remember is the characters.
Yeah,
you remember the Joe Pesci character, you know.
Yeah,
no, you remember Michael Corleone, and I think it's the characters that you remember, because story has been retold and retold a million times. I don't think there's much new stories under the sun. It's just told in a different way. But you make a character that's memorable, yeah. stay with it. You would watch the show to the end just to see how it's going to work out for this character that you become grown to like and become invested in. And one thing I was saying about Super Soul, if you don't like all, there's definitely a character there, one character there for you. There's so much different personalities, whether you're a Rodney, a Taser, or Andre, a Michael, or Sabrina, or even the understudies in the sense of the supports with the Tower Boys and the sister. There's so many characters that are memorable. You just want to watch because you know it's going to be a good time or a sad time with this person. So yeah. I think that's what Super Soul does really well.
It's also reflective of, you know, the world you grew up in and the things you saw. You know, you've said that at least three of the main characters you see a lot of yourself in.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like writing it and knowing? I mean, how aware of that were you when you wrote it? Were you like intentionally putting yourself into these characters, or did that just end up happening?
No, I think I can't write without some sort of natural. I need to be able to relate to create a character. To create a character well, 3D, I need to be able to relate. So I put loads of stuff on experiences that I've been through, experiences I've witnessed, and things that as a character, emotions I've been through as my journey in life. So Taser, there's things, you know, that I can relate with, and Michael and Andre, and
yeah,
and I've done that on purpose because I think if you do that, you can connect with them more. Like the whole situation with Andre and Nando's,
mm-hmm.
with the mother of his child, he wants money to see his kid. I went through that when I was a young dad.
Did you?
Yeah, and I was broke and I needed to pay support, and it was always just like I'm trying my best. Like it's like you're making it pay as you go, and I want to support. This is what I've got. What can I just see it? And it's that, and I understand their point of view. Like, if you're not with the mother of your child, every day that kid is eating, using electricity, and it does cost. Like, having another person in the house, it just does cost. And even if that happens, you say to the mom, you haven't got the money, she still sees it as, well, I haven't got the money, but I'm doing my part. You have to play your part. If you haven't got a part, that's why that scene with Andre, I don't know if there's a good guy or a bad guy in that scene. I don't think the mom's bad. I don't think he's perfect either. So I always wanted to just put my own piece of life into, because I feel like you can relate to things like that.
Yeah.
So I thought on purpose, because these are experiences I relate. You wouldn't see a scene from me that I don't have any acknowledgement of how that would work. I understand the emotion in every scene because I felt it at some point.
Yeah. Well, you just mentioned Taser, who's a gang member. I mean, it's gang leader, maybe.
He's the leader.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Now that, I mean, there's a specific sequence in there. I won't go into detail, but generally, you know, the environment that he's in, I found really terrifying. You know, I mean, I've not thankfully been up close and personal to any of that sort of street violence, you know, to stabbings and anything. I'm not seeing it myself. It's, you know, we both live in London. It's a big topic here. It's on the news all the time. It's politics all the time. But the way that you've portrayed it in the show brought it home to me in such a visceral and grounded way that it made that real, and it made it something that wasn't just what other people do that have nothing to do with me. It wasn't just something that I would read about, you know, in the Evening Standard. It made me feel like I was actually sort of seeing it on the fringes, and it was horrible. So, you know, what was your mission there? Did that come into sort of what you wanted to do with the story, or did that come from further back in terms of your own life experience and what you wanted to say?
I'm very familiar with that world and how the kids still think today. So it's important to me, if I do put a character like that on the screen, it's not just to be highlighted for violence or young kids to be like, I want to be that Taser, he hurts people, he stabs people. It's important to me that you get to believe this character's role, you can see him. So when I do change him, as he does mature and he comes out of it, you can basically go along with him and come out of your situation. And it had to be real, because people look at these kids like, wow, they must have the worst upbringing. They must just be born evil. This kid, for as far as he's concerned, his mom, the one person he loved most in the world, has abandoned him. He's got this chip on his shoulder that he just can't shake. He's angry. He's just angry. He needs someone to sit down and talk to him. And his grandma's trying, but he's just angry. And he wants to have a better life. And the one person that stood around him, his friends and his grandma. So he's right now in the position, I want to make things better for them. I want to help put us in a good position. I want my grandma to be in a good position. The only way I can do that in his mind is in this world, is to get to the top of this food chain. And I just think, Taser is a complicated character. I love him as a character, but I see all of his flaws, you know, and I think that makes the best characters, because normal people, there's no one that's all good and there's no one that's all bad.
Yeah.
You know? There's always something there, and that's what I wanted to do with him.
You do that amazingly with him, because he does horrific things in it, and he does some things seemingly without remorse, okay, because I guess that's what he's used to doing. Mm. And I guess he, in his own way, dehumanizes people and dehumanizes what he's doing, because I guess that's the only way to do it. But then you do have scenes of him in more solitary situations where that is fleshed out and you see the human being behind that. Not that you're justifying anything or even necessarily sympathizing, but you're empathizing with him as a human being.
Yeah. That scene's how you see how he is with his grandma. You see, even when they go to their enemy's estate looking for revenge,
mm-hmm.
he's not keen on having a little kid do 100 star jumps and say this and say that. That's not what he came for. He's like, listen, we're going to come here to trouble civilians.
Yeah, he doesn't have that either.
Yeah, he's not there to just bully people. If you are his enemy, he's like a soldier. Yeah, you send him away to fight in a war, he's going to fight against all the soldiers that are coming against him. He's not going to go and start shooting up civilians on the street.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how he sees it. He sees that as, if you're in this war, then you're in this war and you're going to get the full blood of my force. If you are not in this war, you are a civilian walking on the street, I have no problem with you. Even with the Michael scene in the pilot, it says so much about it when Michael gets into the altercation and punches one of them and he jumps in automatically to defend his brother in arms.
Yeah.
The minute the time rewinds, Michael comes with a more political approach. Listen, I didn't know. Friends are still, he's like, no, look, you didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Now you do know. Next time, come correct.
Yeah.
Leave him alone. So he's very, very, he's got reason outside of the battlefields. There's reason for him. So, and I think those are the greatest characters, man.
Yeah.
Like today, you know, you can't put them in a shape. You don't have a dark or light. It's just there.
And then they make the show, like I say, they make the show what it is. But there's generally an incredible energy to this show. You know, it feels so, like I say, it's nuanced and specific, this show, but it feels so alive. You know, it doesn't stop moving. I mean, obviously there were quieter moments, but it never feels like, there's never a point where you feel like you can feel the writing of the show, you know, or see the director. It doesn't bring attention to itself. You just feel like you're living with these people. There is this great energy. And I think anyone listening to this can hear where that's coming from.
No, I appreciate that, man. I appreciate that. Honestly, the writing process was, it was a long and hard process. And I tried my best to, remember, not doing TV, coming from TV. I wanted it to still for the movie feel, but I wanted you to be engaged. Like, we get a lot of TV shows nowadays where we watch the first episode, that's okay, and you don't really get anything good until the final episode. Yeah. And you're riding it through because you like the character. It's slow, and you're just thinking, well, this is TV. Come towards the last couple of episodes, I'm sure something great's going to happen, so let me give it a try. I didn't want that for Supercell. I want Supercell, you're on the rag. You never know what's going to happen. There's nobody safe. Like, in Supercell, there is literally, I call it like the Game of Thrones effect, because I think they done it first, like with the Red Wedding, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want there to be rules. Like, I love all of my lead characters. If the storyline comes up that makes sense, they might not make it through. Like, I'm very much like, the story is going to the places that no one would ever think is going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how did you outline a vision of how much you want us to do to Netflix? Did you say, this is how many seasons I got in mind, all going well?
I've told them I want 3 seasons. I said that to them very, very early on, probably even before I signed the deal.
Is that just for starters, or do you see it? Is it a 3-season arc finished?
I had a 3-season story. I'm not saying it can't go any further. Because I don't want to say it could go further, maybe, but the story I have down in my head is for 3 seasons.
And is there a reason for that? Because I think you've mentioned to me before, originally you had a movie in mind.
I didn't say it was meant to be a movie originally. But when I pulled all the characters, when I created the characters, it was too much for a film. But I just got where it ends in 3. I just know the story of 3 seasons. I feel like this is someone you character, you can take on forever and ever. I'm very much like, I'm not in the business of always staying my welcome. I want it to be there while it's good. I'm not trying to still checks and just keep a season. Stories getting weaker. I'm just not into that. But right now, I have 3 strong seasons.
Yeah.
Get to season 3, you never know. By then, I might have, you know what, I've got another 2 seasons in me, but I can only talk for now.
Well, we all know what it's like to be watching a show that does have diminishing returns, and then like you like, where is this going? And you can tell that they don't even know where it's going. So it's nice to hear that you've got a wrap up in mind.
Yeah, but I want to say a story. I've got a big story in my mind for Super Soul.
Have you? And well, obviously, in you're a busy man anyway. You're working on films. You're doing lots of things.
Yeah. I just finished writing rough. I finished writing that first draft for a movie. I'll tell you, I was writing a movie. Send that after for him back from Oz. So this is my last couple. This is my few days where I haven't been writing. I've been writing for like a week, and they're gathering up all their notes. So I think I'm going to hear from them next week. But I'm just happy to. This is the first time in a long time I haven't been in the creative process. First time in a long time that I've not been creating something. Because I actually only really finished Super Soul in March.
Right.
In March. And that started in 2020.
When you first had the idea, like 2018,
19? 2019, I spoke the idea out loud on camera as it goes. I was doing press for my movie booster.
Yeah. So 5 years.
I didn't start working on it. I spoke it out loud.
Yeah.
Waiting for Blue Story to come out. Came out a few months after that. And then started working it in 2020.
Does it feel weird now that it's done and you're just waiting for everyone to see it?
It's the hardest way ever. It's like, you know, when like your little kids, I don't know if you got a picture of a pair, when your little kids are counting out the days to their birthday. I'm just like, how many days left before it's out? And it's not because I want any presents. I just need the world to see my child. That's how I feel like. I feel like I've been carrying this baby with me for years. But it's like, I just put it out now. So I just put it out. I'm just waiting and waiting. Like, I don't mind doing press because I'm going to sell the show. But honestly, I wish I could have fast forward to the time where it's on everyone's Netflix account.
Yeah,
that'd be great. You don't love it, that's a shame. But it's out. It's yours now, you know? Like, it's probably yours now. I can move on mentally. I can't physically really move on until I know how the world takes in my show. So I'm just waiting, man. We got a few days left. I don't know when this is coming out, but I meant to talk about the release date until the 6th.
Okay.
But, so if it's after the Super Dude, it's bad. But until then, the release date can't come out. Why? It's coming out this month. Well, June. And I'm just waiting, man. I just want the world to have it, man. I just think it's funny because I had the casting crew screening last night. They just said they've never seen anything like it in that. And then they all came with guests, you know. So people were coming up to me that's never seen it. They don't know what to expect. And that's like, they've just never seen anything like it. They clapped. That scene, the Taylor scene with Digga D, they clapped. It was like a final ovation for the scene because they said it was just so shocking, but it was so adrenaline. They was like, what show is this? Like, they just didn't know where to place it. They kept on thinking, this is this show. It's going this way. And then it turned sharp left. It's like, it was just really nice. And I watched it so many times. I don't really get tired of it. So my plan was just to go introduce this, say hello to all the guys, come back at the end and have the drinks of all the team. I said, you know what, let me just sit and watch it with them, man. Let me just sit and watch. And it's the first time in a long time I've watched those first two episodes without noting it, without having to do notes or what's she thinking about that because I've got the commissioner watching over my shoulder. It was just, let me just watch it. And I was like, wow, this episode went so quick. We played the two episodes back to back so quick. They wanted to watch all of it. It was just probably the only time, one of the only times I'm going to watch you with an audience. So it was nice.
Well, I'm happy for you, man. And I honestly think everyone's going to love it because it's great. It does it all. I think it's absolutely fantastic. So congrats on a great
time. Thank you, brother.
I'm looking forward to 3 seasons work.
Hey, man, I appreciate that. Thank you.
That was Ratman. And now, traditionally, we would move on to the news section. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say there has been no news in the 20 minutes since the last podcast. So what we're going to do is we will return to news later this week, possibly with Kay, possibly without Kay. We'll have to see. But we'll do a little bit of news later on so we can cover stuff off because really nothing has happened at this point. So imagine a drop-in coming in here. Okay, time for news. We have reconvened. It is Friday. Several days has passed, and hopefully, some news has occurred in that period of time. Boydie, what have you got for us?
Well, some really good news, I think, broke yesterday, James. I'm sure you're probably maybe too busy to notice. I don't know. You live a hectic life. But the OA creators Britt Marling and Zalbat Manglij have got a deal, a development deal with Sister Productions, who are the extremely good production company behind shows such as Eric, which we recently reviewed with Benedict Cumberbatch, The Power. They did This Is Going to Hurt, Gangs of London, Landscapers, Chernobyl, famously, they did.
I feel almost obligated to jump on that because I've forgotten the how you pronounce Chernobyl and it never ceases to make me...
I deliberately, provocatively mispronounced it. Yeah.
It never ceases to entertain me.
Chernobyl.
Where is it? Chernobyl. Chernobyl.
That was produced by them. So I think this is very good news. And the interesting thing is that the executive in charge of Sister is a woman called Cindy Holland. She's the global CEO. And she was vice president of original content for Netflix when they developed the OA. So her and Zal and Britt have history. And that was, of course, the first TV project that they created together after doing various indie films and stuff. So they've got that prior relationship. So immediately, of course, all fans of their work are clamoring to see whether this might be good news on the OA seasons 3 to 5, which were never made and yet fully thought through by Zal and Britt. But just the fact that they've got you know, a home for their fantastic projects and fantastic ideas is very exciting, I think.
That is. They are great. And obviously, we're excited about everything they do. Murder at the End of the World, obviously, only being the most recent example of Britt and Zal's work.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm psyched. I'm obviously be more psyched if they'd suddenly found a new home for the OA, but I think that ship has long since sailed. So,
well, I think, you know, maybe one day, this kind of deal is maybe one, it looks, you know, I think something might happen one day. That's all I'm saying.
Well, let us hope. Well, from something that you love to something I love, there's been some Game of Thronesy things happening this week, which is very exciting. So we got the first shot from production of the Dunk and Egg series, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which is the spin-off, one of the spin-offs from Game of Thrones. And this is the stories of Sir Duncan the Tall, a knight whose main distinguishing feature is, yes, his height. But he teams up with Egg, which is short for Aegon, who you may notice is a Targaryen name. And so basically you get the young, essentially... princeling, and a Targaryen princeling as squire to Sir Duncan the Tall. And so it's the Duncan Egg stories. They're based on some shorts by George R. R. Martin. They're really good. It's a lot of fun. I'm actually pretty psyched about this. Bertie Carvel's in this. Your friend Sam Spruill is in this. And Peter Claffley is playing Sir Duncan the Tall. And Dexter Salt Ansel is playing his squire Egg. And I'm very excited about this. And it's just a picture of him in a cloak, holding a sword, walking through what looks like Flea Bottom in King's Landing.
Flea bottom.
Wow. Which is not a medical condition, but a locale. The other thing is that, speaking of sort of like spin-offs to Game of Thrones, the prequel series, you remember 10,000 Ships, which is one of the prequels that were vying for production, kind of like fell by the wayside. Apparently, this has been revived. It's now back in production. That's actually something that's going to be coming along. So it has a new writer in Ebony Booth. So it actually looks like it might actually be happening.
She's
been working for a new pilot.
That wasn't the Jane Goldman one, was it? Was that?
No, I think Jane Goldman was working on that one, which, again, it was set even further in the past, right, which is all beyond the wall and had White Walkers and whatnot in it. No, this is a kind of a prequel, and it's set earlier on, and it follows the Dornish warrior queen, Nymeria. So there you go. And the Rhoynar. Huh? I can tell you're excited. But anyway, more Game of Thrones is good. That's what I'm going to say.
Of course. Did you see the news that, you know, the Night Manager... it's going back, which we discussed a few weeks ago when it was announced. But they announced that Olivia Colman is returning.
Yes.
Which is very important, I think, because she was fantastic in the original as Angela Burr. And so she joins Tom Hiddleston, who will be back, of course. And the cast is amazing, actually. Alistair Petrie, Douglas Hodge, Michael Nardone, Noah Jupe, and loads more. And yeah, it's I think that's fantastic news that Colman is back. Indira Varma is also in it, Paul Jahidi, Hayley Squires, etc. Jonathan Pryce. Oh, no, not Jonathan Pryce, I've invented that. his name's Jonathan Pine. That's what confused me. That's Hiddleston's character. Yeah. It's being directed by Georgie Banks Davis, who made I Hate Susie and Paper Girls, FYI.
Exciting. Mm. We still haven't got Interview with the Vampire, obviously, as we know, because we haven't been able to review it. But season 2 has not come to us. But there's been some tantalizing news about what season 3, if indeed it happens, could be. That it would, in fact, move on to the Vampire Lestat. So the Vampire Lestat is the second book in the series, and it's from, as you might imagine, Lestat's point of view. It's a very different book to Interview with the Vampire. Interview with the Vampire is very much from Louis's perspective, and Lestat is kind of like the antagonist in many ways. He becomes the protagonist. And when Rice was writing about this, she was very much Louis when she wrote Interview with the Vampire, but she became Lestat from the second book onwards. He became her central vampire protagonist. And it's a really interesting switch of seeing everything from his point of view, but also it goes to wild new directions. He becomes a rock star, and I mean that literally, not metaphorically. There's a lot of stuff going on. So what they use from it, because they took quite substantial leaps from the source material for Interview with the Vampire for the first two seasons. So I'm fascinated to see where they go, what new directions they go in with this. So hopefully we will get to see that. Hopefully we'll get to see season two at some point, but you know, beyond that, we should hopefully see more.
You never know. One day, I'm sure we will.
We never know.
Yeah.
Have you seen any of the trailers this week, by the way?
Which trailers?
So there was a Penguin trailer, which I have not seen.
I have not seen it either. Brilliant.
And there was a trailer for Lady in the Lake, the Natalie Portman show, which is on Apple TV Plus as well.
Oh, no. Well, I didn't catch that trailer, but I might have caught more than the trailer. Because
see. You've been watching the show.
Well, it may well be available in the Apple TV, in the celebrated Apple TV portal.
Heavily embargoed
in the Apple TV. So yeah, I may or may not have dived in early doors for that one. Yeah. But I imagine the trailer will confirm what I confirm from it, that it looks really good. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The trailer can exclusively reveal the trailer looks very good.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Whether I watch the first episode or not.
Right, fair enough. Well, yeah, there's also a Penguin trailer, which I really want to see, because Colin Farrell back as the Penguin from The Batman, the Matt Reeves film. But there's also other Batman news, if you're interested in the Caped Crusader. So you'll obviously know that the late, great Kevin Conroy, who voiced the animated Batman for a very long time, passed away. So he has a replacement. Hamish Linklater is going to be voicing the Dark Knight in the upcoming Batman Caped Crusader animated series. Hamish Linklater, of course, who was in many ways, he was the priest in Midnight Mass. He was the dodgy reporter who made stuff up in the newsroom. He's a great actor, and presumably has a great voiceover, a set of voiceover lungs on him. So he's going to be doing Batman. He's got a good growl.
You can tell he's got a great voice anyway, can't you? I think that's yeah, clear.
Can you do Batman? It's a very specific voice.
Well, that's the that was the Dark Knight version, wasn't it? What's his name? Yeah.
Maybe you're going a completely different direction. Maybe he'll be like Scouse Batman. Who knows? It could happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe this could be a chance for you to go through your repertoire of accents.
You think? Yeah.
Yeah.
Perhaps an Australian. No, I'm not gonna do it. I'm not gonna do it. It's not gonna happen.
No.
But yeah. Good for Hamish.
Very good for Hamish. I have to say that I went to see The Jetty this week, a screening of The Jetty. So I'm moving this into news, even though it could have been in what we watched this week in the section. But it's news as well. But that's coming soon to BBC One, and it's very interesting. But I just have to say this quickly, that I had a brilliant moment, because they screened The Jetty with Jenna Coleman in a hotel in Soho, in the screening room. I watched the thing, then there was a Q&A, and then I came out. And the first person I see, literally, as I emerged from the screening room, was Karen Gillan. So it was like a Doctor Who companion super morning where, it had Dr. Jenna Coleman first, then Karen Gillan, who I'd interviewed recently anyway. And it was a fantastic coming together for me, of Doctor Who companions.
Amazing.
Yeah, whether that's news or not, who cares?
Who cares indeed?
Yeah.
I'm going to say, since we're segueing back into the what we've been watching section, and since we've now actually watched stuff because the week has gone past, I will say, if anyone watches Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, which is obviously an excellent comedy news show, the most recent episode of that, as we go out, I guess, actually, to be fair, as we go out, it will be the one before, which was where he talks about the upcoming American presidential election and what the second Trump term will look like, is one of the most important ones I think I've seen, in that it's genuinely blood-curdlingly terrifying. If you are not an American citizen and cannot vote in the US elections, I would suggest maybe don't watch it, because it might just depress you. But if you do have the opportunity to vote in America, maybe you should watch it. I'm just going to say that. It makes for interesting viewing.
Yeah, I saw that. I actually saw it because I watch it quite regularly. I have to say, I don't think John Oliver's going to make any difference, mate. I'm sorry to break it to you.
Well, I would say John Oliver's audience is pretty much already
all
in the tank.
They're already on board. Yeah. He's a British lefty, you know. I mean,
yeah.
At one point, I actually...
He's not converting.
He's not converting. And funnily enough, at one point in his rant, he said, like, we talked about America and we. And I'm like, they must be sitting there going, who's this fucking limey twat telling us what to do? So, I mean, I love him, don't get me wrong. But, yeah.
Well, he might have citizenship now. I don't know if he works on a green card or whether he's actually
does.
A citizen.
Actually, you're right. He probably does. He probably does.
So he, yeah. It's okay. Possible he could vote.
Okay,
but
fine. I'll let that go. But, yeah, he's not winning over anyone in the battleground states.
No, he's not. I mean, it is the most, like left-leaning show imaginable. So I don't imagine it's doing anything. But I think it's just the whole thing. I don't want to get into politics. This is not a politics podcast, but God forbid. But suffice it to say, it made me want to start digging my bunker in the back garden. I'm just gonna leave that there.
Yeah.
But yes, I last week's night's great. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I think it's funny and informative.
It is. I guess we should mention the late Donald Sutherland.
Sutherland, yes, who died last night as we record. That was very upsetting.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll be covering this in depth in the Empire film podcast.
We will, yes.
But just to say, he did do quite a lot of TV, especially in recent years. He was in Trust, do you remember that? He played J. Paul Getty brilliantly in that kind of miniseries that was directed by Danny Boyle, etc. He was really good in that. He was in The Undoing, which was the really entertaining Hugh Grant, Nicole Kidman series.
That's right, that absolutely mad one.
Yeah. Brilliantly bonkers, yeah. And he had a very good character, Franklin Renner, I think was the name of his character in that.
Yeah. He was in Lawmen, Bass Reeves with David O'Yellowo.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Taylor Sheridan, the Taylor Sheridan verse. He was in that.
And did you see Swimming with Sharks?
Yes.
You know the TV version of that?
Yeah. That was really interesting. Yeah. It was like a one off, like 6-episode version of that. Yeah. He was really good in that as well. I mean, obviously, his greatest triumphs are in his superb films, but he was he had a pretty good second half of his career or last third of his career or whatever, doing loads of great TV, loads of kind of.
Yeah, he did. Do you remember? I think he was one of the principal antagonists in. Did you ever watch Commander in Chief?
Yes.
The Gina Davis TV show where she was like the president and he was like the scheming, like, I think, was he the speaker? I can't remember what his actual, it was a long time ago. I think that was what, 2005?
Yeah.
But I think he was the Speaker of the House. But yeah, he was very oily in that. He did that very well.
Yeah, he was brilliant at that. And then there was a show called Dirty Sexy Money. Which was like a kind of a look at, you know, politics and law. And it was kind of like Bryan Singer produced it, I seem to remember. And that ran, that had like, you know, network 23 episodes kind of thing situation in 2007, 2009. Peter Krause was in it. Is that how you pronounce his name? Anyway, yeah, he was like the patriarch. Donald Sutherland was the patriarch and had a great old time married to Jill Clayburgh. It was fun.
Well, I mean, and also it's TV adjacent, but obviously he was the original Hawkeye.
Yes,
in MASH.
Yeah.
Back in 1972. Yeah. So
he turned him into Robert a superstar.
Altman. That was without him, there would be no Alan Alda as Hawkeye on TV. The finale of which, as we've said before, is I think still the highest rated TV show in American history, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, Seinfeld finale up there, but I think MASH is the record holder. Yeah.
Yeah. Wild. Donald Sutherland, then, who died at the age of 88. Is that it for news? Are we done with news?
I think so.
I think we've exhausted news.
Yeah.
We've exhausted news, and we move on now to this week's reviews. And we begin this week with Douglas is Cancelled on ITV. And this is a kind of comedy drama from Stephen Moffat in which Hugh Bonneville's news anchor, Douglas, of the title, is cancelled after an off-colour sexist joke. And to talk about this, I pass you over now to the pilot host most likely to be cancelled for making their own off-colour sexist joke. It's Kay Ribeiro.
Well, listen, if Darren releases those tapes, yep, I will be cancelled. Yes, so as James said, Hugh Bonneville plays Douglas, who is indeed accused of making a sexist comment at a wedding. And so when the action picks up is that his producer suddenly gets alerted to a tweet and then questions him on this. And now Douglas can't remember anything. He doesn't think he said anything. He was amongst family. He's very unperturbed by it, when in fact the producer is very twitchy because, you know, Douglas presumes the tweet is from a woman and that she's not very intelligent, which says it all. And he's like, okay, goes into a bit of crisis management mode. Meanwhile, his co-host, Madeline, we kind of learn a bit more about her and his friend, their working relationship. They have a great chemistry, not sexual, but they do get on very well. And we get the idea that she gently humours him. He's clearly the more experienced broadcaster who's taken her under his wing and given advice. It's got a similar vibe. At first, I thought he's like Hugh Edwards, but actually, I think he's like Adrian Charles. And then she's kind of Christine Lampard figures. So they get on well, but...
James has no idea who these people are, by the way.
Not a clue, but carry on.
He did look at me blankly. But, you know, you get the impression that perhaps behind the surface, there's a little power struggle. But to all intents and purposes, they get on well. Until Madeline retweets the tweet. And what I loved about this, first of all, I mean, it's just a great depiction of what happens when someone makes an unfortunate, we don't even know what the comment is. So we don't even know what the joke is, but he just done something and how the public and the world reacts to it and how, you know, it could ruin the career, rightly or wrongly. But I think what's really fascinating and smart about this is that the fact that she has retweeted it, she's got 2 million followers, which is the thing he's most fixated on. Not the fact that she's retweeted it, the fact that she's got more followers than him. And it's the phrasing. So she says in her tweet, she retweets it and ostensibly seems to be defending him, saying, hashtag don't believe this, not my co-presenter, which I took to be like, oh yeah, she's just defending it, but is it tactical to be retweeting the message and you know, broadcasting it to a load of followers who wouldn't have seen it? But interestingly, and it's his wife, played by Alex Kingston, who is quite a formidable character. She's a newspaper boss, and she kind of points out to him, well, actually, is that how she meant it? Because you could read it, don't believe this, not my co-presenter, like as in like trying to distance herself. So that's the crucial thing that I think is really interesting about this. Alex Kingston is great. I mean, she really lifts the lid on how a newspaper works. So, you know, they've got a good relationship. You can tell that she's slightly jealous of Madeline, or at least incredulous of the effect she has on Douglas, because Douglas tends to lean on her a lot, or they have, you know, tete-a-tete, nothing untoward happening, but she's still kind of wary of Madeline. And I think what's really interesting about the whole thing is just how it lifts the lid on the media. And that's done largely through her character, because as she's discussing this with him, she's sort of like writing the story out loud, the headline, the first paragraph, this, that, and the other. And it's very well done, because it just shows you how things will be translated in print, in the media, which, you know, as we all know, working in the media, how it can pan out. I just really, really like this. I think it's fascinating and it really makes you think. And as people working in the media, you recognize these characters, I think, like when I was watching the Alex Kingston character, and even some of the producers and stuff, you're like, yep, I know people like this. And so I just think it's really, in the same way that, you know, the Newsnight Netflix, what was that called?
Scoop,
yeah, how it lifted the lid and just sort of gave an insight. I think it's similarly, on a different level and obviously a different subject matter, it does the same. So yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. If I had to make one small criticism, it would be the character of Claudia, who is their daughter, who is very funny. She shows a different side to Alex Kingston's character, because obviously Alex Kingston's a very powerful woman, but in the house, she is basically dominated by her daughter, who is a complete nightmare, pushes all her buttons, a millennial Gen Z outraged teenager who like is offended by everything. However, like, even though she's got really great lines and she's amusing to watch, you know, because of her faux outrage and just like, you know, irritability at everything, I felt like she's out of all of them, she's the one that was like, she feels like a character.
So it's interesting you say that, because she comes into it relatively early in the show. I really bumped on that character in a big way, to the extent where I almost cringed through a lot of the first episode, because I was like, it had big, like, hey, fellow kids energy. And I just thought, this is the kind of the archetypal thing, it felt to me, of like a middle-aged man trying to write young people. And like, so the daughter is just like a bingo card of like Gen Z tropes. And it's just like she rolls out an OK Boomer, she's offended by this, this is racist, this is that. And it's just like, it felt a little bit like, at that point, I was like, if I didn't know better, I think this was kind of almost like a right-wing send-up of sort of like, quote-unquote, and I hate to use the word, woke culture. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It felt just like really painful. And there is an assistant to Alex Kingston's character who is exactly the same.
Yes.
Who like, I'm all of my mental health, I'm in internalizing and you're being too angry. And like, it's just all this. And I was like, this is just so, this is nonsense. Like, it's just, it's terrible. However,
they're caricatures.
Yeah, they felt like absolute caricatures. However, and you know how I'm not good sometimes at telling whether something's a comedy or not?
No.
Well, genuinely, throughout the whole first episode, I really, really struggled with that. And I thought, God, if this wasn't Stephen Moffat, I would say this is just really badly written. And then it ends on a kind of cliffhanger, the first episode. So I thought, well, do you know what? I want to watch the second one as well. So I put the second one, and the penny didn't really drop for me until the beginning of the second episode. I'm like, oh, this is a comedy. Of course it's a comedy. And when you watch it through that lens, it all makes perfect sense, because of course the daughter is a pastiche, because she's supposed to be, like, it's a joke, it's a gag, it's supposed to be funny. And I think when Nick Mohammed's character, so he comes in as a comedian who's going to help sort of spin this, when he comes in, and again, he's just deliberately like gag after gag after gag, I'm like, okay, the first episode, it walked this line between comedy and drama, and I don't think, you know, I don't have a finely tuned comedic sense at the best of times, but I was like, okay, it's funny.
In your defense, I don't think it was clear enough, because I actually felt like it was more drama.
Okay, I'm glad it wasn't just me.
Yeah, no,
because I thought you two would be like, of course it's a comedy, you're an idiot.
Genuinely, I felt like it played more, like it was more drama with comedic elements. There were certain moments of light relief, but I didn't see Claudia, the daughter, as a comedy character. I thought she was just, you know.
What? Yeah, when I was the same way. I think the second episode for me felt more overtly comedic. And I think once the second episode kicked in, I got into the right wavelength. I just think I was on the wrong wavelength for episode one. Episode two, once I kind of tapped it, I thought, oh, this is supposed to be funny. I then kind of embraced all that stuff and it didn't bother me in the slightest. So I had a much better time with the second episode than I did the first one, because I felt like I was actually on the correct wavelength for the show. But like, Boydie, am I being mad? Like, what did you think?
No, you're not being mad. It's a tough one to review, because it veers between comedy and drama throughout. I mean, yeah, there is a lot of comedy stuff in there, including that character. And I mean, the fact that the clue to the fact that it's a comedy or not is the fact that Douglas's agent is called Bentley Cassock, and is played by Simon Russell Beale, who is the hero of the hour, because not only is he absolutely brilliant in the House of the Dragon coming up on Sky, but he's phenomenal in this as the world's worst agent. And the scenes with him holding forth in the restaurant, in the posh restaurant, are just hilarious. So, and there's another bit where the producer, Douglas's boss / producer, played by Ben Miles, brings in this guy who to be like a comedy, to come up with some comedy lines. And he turns out to be his driver for the last 8 years. He's got the wrong guy in. This goes, I'm just your driver. And then the actual comedy writer comes in, played by Nick Mohammed, who is given the job of coming up with some lines for Douglas to say. So there's loads of comedy stuff in there. But it really does absolutely deliberately what's the word? Keep you off guard, this show. It's all about starting out as one thing and ending up as another. So you really have to see all four episodes, people, to get what this whole thing. And it changes extraordinarily, I would say. Particularly once episode three, and I'm trying not to spoil it, but episode three is like a set piece one-on-one between two characters who I will not name in a room. And it's almost like a stage play in its own right. And it's just that one scene pretty much solidly for the whole episode. Just two people. It started out as a stage play, and Stephen Moffat sent it to Karen Gillan, who's just, you know, because he worked with her on Doctor Who, for feedback. And she wanted him to make it into a film. And he was like, nothing happened. And then suddenly 6 years later, he's like, we're going to do it for ITV as a four-part drama. So it wears its stage origins, particularly in episode three, quite proudly. And it veers constantly between being dramatic and funny all the way through, as a lot of Stephen Moffat stuff does, to be fair, including Doctor Who and Sherlock, etc. So I think it's his vibe, it's his style very much to go for comedy and then the next minute, really intense, quite emotional drama. And there's a lot of quite heavyweight stuff that happens in the last two episodes without wanting to in any way to give anything away. So I absolutely loved it. I mean, I am hosting the Q&A for it tonight as we speak at the BFI.
Boydie is cancelled.
I am biased. The other thing I would say is I saw someone said to me, you know, the whole idea, his wife, so Douglas, who is supposed to be, you know, a national treasure TV presenter, a very famous kind of guy, he's married to a tabloid editor. And some people might say that's far-fetched. But of course, It happened.
Rebecca Wade.
Yeah, Rebecca Wade and Ross Kemp. I don't think they were married, but they certainly were longtime partners at one point. Until...
And I don't know if he was described as national treasure, but...
Well, you know, I've watched Bridge of Lies, or whatever it's called, on BBC One. In which Ross Kemp...
Do you know what? The energy he puts into creating jeopardy where there is none, yeah. Is quite...
He shouts a lot in that show, to give Ross Kemp credit. Well... He just is an extraordinary figure. So, like, you couldn't make up, you know, Stephen Moffat has come up with some ludicrous moments in this show, but all of it is justifiable because this is the crazy world of the media that we live in. And I think he's brilliantly tapped into some of the more, like, the character that Nick Muhammad plays, he's the least funny comedy expert ever invented. Yeah. He's incredibly unfunny, has terrible ideas for jokes. And that's brilliant. I love, and clearly Stephen Moffat is getting a lot of his issues out in the show. Do you know what I mean? Like, comedy writers who aren't funny, TV producers who are stupid, people making the wrong decision all the way through about crucial things. Tabloids, I mean, he has a right go at, you know, coverage of people's private lives and stuff. It's so funny how he's got, like, all of his, I feel like, many, many of his issues are coming out in the show. But most important of all, it's brilliantly entertaining. I just thought it was so fun, the whole thing. And as I say, it pulls the rug from under you in episode 3 and 4 in a magnificent way. And it is not about what you think it starts out to be about, without giving anything away.
What?
There you go.
I'm interested to see the rest of that. I'm glad, Kay, that you had a similar experience to me. I'm glad that wasn't just me, because I was 100% convinced this was just me just not understanding comedy.
No. Listen, you know, I'm always the first to point that out, if that's true, but no.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also worth noting, as Boydie said, it was like written a long time ago. So while it seems almost inspired by a lot of the recent things, whether it be Scoop or a number of, shall we say, TV cancellations of people, it predates a lot of that stuff. Yeah, yeah, so it just intersects with it.
Completely.
But interesting stuff. Douglas is cancelled then, which is not cancelled. In fact, it airs on ITV when, Boydie?
Thursday, the 27th of June, 2024, 9 p.m. And it's all on. I just love seeing James's face now when I say that.
I know. I'm so grumpy.
Yeah. And I think it's all on the ITVX thing as well, if you want to watch all the episodes, okay. Which you should.
Next up this week, we have Land of Women on Apple TV Plus, and this is a comedy thriller by Ramon Campos, and it's inspired by the novel. And this sees Eva Longoria as a woman who's forced to flee to Spain with her mother and daughter after her husband, played by James Purefoy, borrows a huge stack of money from the wrong people. Talk about this. Perched upon his own huge stack of money is Boyd Hilton.
Oh, God, you really tickled, Kate. Very funny. excuse me.
Not untrue.
No. Yeah, this is, it's kind of fun, isn't it? It's fun, frothy, other words beginning with F, entertaining, that doesn't begin with F. I feel like, I feel like we've seen this story before, haven't we? We've seen stories of husbands having secret, financial, disastrous lives that their wives and families don't know about. It's quite a common basis story to be told, and there have been loads of TV dramas and comedies, and I think there have been a few Apple TV ones as well that I can't really remember exactly what they are, that start out with that whole idea of people having to completely adjust their lives and their lives falling apart because of secret financial badness from their partners. So to start with, I was like, yeah, you know, I've definitely seen this before. Yeah, Kay's looking askance, listeners, at me, in case you can't see, on the Zoom, on the Riverside. So, but then, as it wore on, and it became more about the relationship between Eva Longoria's character, the mum, her mother, played by Carmen Maurer, who is the legendary actress who's in loads and loads of Almodovar films, Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, Volver, however you pronounce it, and many more. And she is like a legend, absolute legend. And she plays Eva Longoria's mother, who's kind of having some kind of... She has memory issues as she's getting older. She can't remember everything. And Victoria Bazua as her daughter, Kate. And basically, Eva Longoria's character, Gola, comes up with kind of lies about why she's suddenly whisking off her mother and daughter to this obscure part of Spain where her mother originates, and where there's this kind of like... massive farmhouse which they owned back in the day, but then her mother sold behind her back to some dude. And there's a whole There's a meet cute involving a car crash with the hot local guy played by Santiago Cabrera.
Star Trek Picard, Santiago Cabrera.
And I mean, I've only watched one episode, but if Eva Longoria and him don't get it together at some point, then I'll
there's no justice
I'll
in
eat
this world.
All of those grapes that are spilled in that car crash scene. The stuff about this, the relationship between these three generations of women was well done, and I think they're good, they're decent characters, and I like the interplay between them is funny. It's a little bit larger than life, slightly cartoonish. The incredible coincidences they use, but it's fun and entertaining and beautifully shot, as all in classic Apple TV Plus style, crisp, vibrant colors everywhere. And there's this incredible his house on the hill, which they go to. There's a bit dispute as to whether he's got the rights to it or whether they've, you know, it's been sold behind Eva Longoria's character's back. It's like a kind of brilliant, like interior, beautiful interiors, rustic. You know, it's like something out of a property porn show. I thought that was quite funny.
And I'd live there.
Yeah, and he's cooking lentils. He's very like man of the earth, isn't he? He's got like lentils on the stove on a slow cook.
Man of the earth.
Yeah. So it's kind of a bit cliched and a bit, and it will be very predictable. I mean, I don't even have to watch it to know what's going to happen, but yeah, I enjoyed it. Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot.
It should also worth pointing out, it is, I would say, 80% Spanish language as well.
Yeah. It's very Spanish. Yeah, sure.
It is very Spanish.
Yeah.
Much
which
like
you won't
Warrior
hear
Man.
Me complaining about. I enjoyed this. It is what, Boyd is right. You know, there are kind of unrealistic moments and it is predictable. However, I've got no issue with that because it's just fun and entertaining, and Eva Longoria gives really good wrong wife energy. She's just got this scrappy do vibe to her, which I appreciate. And I think it is really interesting relationships between the three generations of women. They're all very strong characters in themselves, and I just love Carmen Maura. So yeah, I was very much on board with this. And I like the fact that it's really exploring the mother's life before she had children and stuff like that. You know, she, because of her memory issues, it's really nice to see how she, by being back into her hometown, she takes this trip down memory lane and things start coming back to her and stuff like that, and how that's going to play out. But
it's got big rom-com energy, like as in this 100% feels like one of the classic sort of like noughties rom-coms. I was bored out of my mind watching this, it has to be said. Like I just found it quite slight. Like the whole thing is very, very predictable. It's so slight. You know, like, so it's like, it's gently amusing rather than funny. It's sort of very lightly interesting rather than compelling.
Yeah, you know, what's wrong with that? Sometimes you need that just to wash over you.
I mean, do you? I just feel that, again, like with the amount of great stuff on television, I don't know where this fits in, because it's, you know, again, if this was a rom-com, if it's a tight 90-minute rom-com, you think, brilliant, let's do it, this is a load of fun. But it's not. It's how many episodes? 6, 8, 29? I've no idea. But whatever it is, it's at least 5 hours
least
too long.
Six. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just like, I don't think this story needs to take place over that amount of time. No. I just
so
don't
grumpy.
Need it.
It also very much feels, I kept thinking, this very much feels like Apple TV Plus have got the most female-oriented show in probably in its history. Like, this is a thing about three generations of women. It's very like, and they're putting it out in during the World Cup, the Euros, not the World Cup, and all this sport, or this month of sport that's going on. It felt slightly like, you know, sexist, like, oh, this is one for the ladies, you know, it's all about it's,
or was it sexist of you to say?
Well,
that?
No, I was saying, I'm not saying that, Kay. I'm saying This is
very likely a programming decision. But also, not being funny, like female-led stories can be absolutely brilliant and compelling and all these sorts of things. They don't need to be this, which is just
not
like...
Not everything has to be peak TV. I think this
is... That's fair, like, absolutely fair.
This is a decent rom-com, yeah, you know, comedy drama.
But be honest,
I'll continue.
You're
going to
spend
it.
6 hours watching.
Yeah, you're going to carry on. Are you? Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that
absolutely.
Is.
I'm committed to watching this.
She'll watch it on the way to fucking Thailand to get a massage.
You commit to it. This is like me and that Channel 5 show. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Love,
yeah, that's it.
Love,
yeah,
rat,
you watch it just to spite us at this point.
Yeah.
Again,
no,
it's just like
actively. I've told my friend, my half Spanish friend as well. It's a good way to practice. Like, if you speak Spanish as well. Anyway,
wait a minute. Are you saying one of the best things about it is the fact that it's a good way to learn Spanish?
No, it's an additional bonus for me, okay, personally,
right,
who wants to practice,
right,
Spanish. Yeah.
I enjoyed it as it was. James, I think James's description of it as being just being like, you know, there, like a blah, like a, you know, kind of like not funny enough, not romantic, all that. It's true. I mean, it is just like fine. It's absolutely fine, isn't it? It's just like, no way am I going to carry on watching any more of this.
Absolutely not.
Yeah,
it's absolutely not.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you two are fine.
So. Yes.
I just, not that I've taken this personally at all.
I will say, Eva Longoria gives it her all. She's funny in the way she delivers the lines. Like she really goes for it.
She's got good comedy timing, hasn't she?
Yeah. Santiago Cabrera is also funny, kind of like just absolutely exasperated by the situation where this woman has essentially moved into his house. But again, it's just like, I just don't care. And I don't see that changing.
The dog was cute. There's a cute dog in it.
There's a cute dog. There you go. Come watch this for the cute dog. There you go. That's your impetus. All right, fine. Well, that's the perfectly fine Land of Women, which lands on Apple TV Plus.
June 26th, which is, I think, the Wednesday. Wednesday, June 26th, 2024, Apple TV Plus.
Right. Finally this week, we have the third series of The Bear, except we don't have the third series of The Bear because they haven't given us screeners for the third series of The Bear. And we're not even sure we're going to get one. But if we do get them, then we're going to have Kay beam in live from Thailand, presumably while getting some kind of deep tissue massage. So, you know, we'll find out. Hopefully we will address that later in the week. So hopefully, possibly now you might hear us review The Bear. We're back. We are back with our review of The Bear, except we're not, because we're not here with Kay, who was not with us, and we're not here with The Bear, because that's not with us either, because they did not provide screeners, so we haven't seen it. So Boyd in particular, I can tell, is very upset about this, but we are not going to be able to bring you our much-promised review of The Bear at all, because we haven't seen it. However, I do think this might actually work out quite well, because as we've discussed, there's really nothing on next week. So what we'll end up doing, I think, now is reviewing The Bear next week. So we will push The Bear to next week's show. We will cover it then, by which point Kay will be back and fully massaged and all will be right with the world. So apologies for the bait and switch and the promise of a Bear review, which frankly isn't here. Okay, so what does that make our pick of the week?
Douglas is cancelled, you know.
Without seeing The Bear, I'm 100%, plumping for Douglas is cancelled.
Okay, so at the moment, it is Douglas is cancelled, though for Kay, it's clearly Land of Women that she's planning to watch the entirety of.
I can't wait.
Other things out this week. The main other thing out this week, I guess, is My Lady Jane, which drops on Prime on Thursday, because everything this week, it's worth mentioning, we did touch on this last week, drops on Thursday. Beacon 23 is on Paramount Plus on Thursday. Douglas is cancelled on Thursday. My Lady Jane on Thursday. Supercell lands on Netflix on Thursday. The Bear Season 3 on Disney Plus on Thursday. Land of Women is Wednesday. But so there's a lot. It's a busy Thursday night. I'm assuming that most of you won't be going out because there's a lot on television.
It is mad how everyone's decided that the 27th of June is the day of TV of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird.
Is there a football match on that particular day?
That's a good question. There'll be a football.
Are they counter-programming a big match? But then normally they flee from sports. Yeah. So that seems unlikely.
Yeah, it is weird. It is weird. There is no match on the 27th. Maybe that's why. Oh, there you go. That is a fallow day.
They're avoiding the football.
Mm. Yeah, there we go. Just answered our own fascinating question.
Except for Land of Women, which is deliberately and provocatively programming against the football.
I think of someone else who's being deliberately provocative, actually. Yeah.
Oh, go back to your massage table, okay?
With pleasure.
Yeah. Okay, fine. So I guess that is all that's out this week. But that's it. That is the show. We are done. If you did enjoy it, do head over to, Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave us a 5 deep tissue rating. I will say that if you're going to leave us a review, please don't leave us a review like Talk of the Town did. With the review, great opinions, sometimes divisive, and always good discussions. James did skip the middle episode of X-Men 97 and judges too harshly on animation. What a plonker. 2 stars. I mean,
2 stars.
2 stars. Oh. I felt like he had a better, or they had a better than 2-star experience, despite my animation bias.
Oh my god.
So I thought 2 stars was harsh. I think Talk of the Town should revise
old school
it.
Use of plonker as well.
That's what I was gonna say. Yeah. I do commend them on using plonker though.
Reclaiming it for the English language.
Yeah.
Perfectly fair. Yes, and please do follow us on the social medias at Pilot TV Pod, at Kay Rivera, at Boyd Hilton, at James C. Dyer. Next week, is, I mean, if you thought this week was light on television, next week is kind of a bit of a wasteland. So I do not know what we're going to end up doing next week. I think we're going to do My Lady Jane next week because that is embargoed. So we won't be able to do that this week anyway. Supercell's going to be on this week's Pilot Plus. Good Girls Guide to Murder. We might end up doing that. That's exciting. That's on the 1st of July. That's on Monday. So that probably goes to next week's. Other than that, I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, it'll be an adventure.
Fun times.
Yeah, it'll be an adventure. It'll be an exciting adventure. Or Boyd can tell us more about the football. One or the other. Until then, pilot out.